Welcome to episode number 359 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to answer that question, are you raising a spoiled American child? That's right, in this country where freedom and riches abound, we often can offer our things to our kids that we can't get, and a lot of other kids can't get in other countries. So here's the question, does our kids having stuff make them spoiled or not? Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to that next level. The date today is March the 2nd, 2015. It is beginning of the week Monday. That's right, it is beginning of the week. It is March. February went by so quick. It is cold and snowy and icy here in West Texas as we speak, as we're recording right now. That's right, I had to crunch through ice and snow just to get out here to the storage building, and then I had to basically chisel the door to my studio, recording studio, open just so that way I could get in. It is awesome. We have so many people in Texas that complain all the time about, oh, it's too cold, it's too hot, it's all this stuff, bipolar Texas weather, and I will be honest, Texas weather is weird, and this year has been especially weird, and you know what? I love it. I absolutely love it. Why do I love it? Because it is really cool that one day I can plan to sneak in a motorcycle ride, and I get my ride in, and then the very next day or the day after that, I'm in my Equex, my extreme cold weather condition system, military gear, parkas, and wrapped up tight in toboggans getting to walk through snow. I love that. So I love the Texas weather, and as much as people gripe and complain about it, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. So we are in the middle of that here in Texas. Our topic for today is going to be, are you raising a spoiled American? That's right. That's right. We talk a lot about the ideas of riches and having things and iPads and Netflix and all these other really good things that we say are good, or maybe they're not so good. Today we're going to answer that question. Are you spoiling your child? It's a very, very important, a tantamount question that we have to ask ourselves. There's a thin line there that if we're not careful, we're skirting, or if we're not careful, we're really not crossing at all, and we're calling our children spoiled when they're not. We're going to stay tuned for that. We're going to get into that real quick. Housekeeping, if you guys want to get notified of any new episodes that come out here, make sure you go to thefamilypodcast.com, right-hand side, in your name and your email address. Make sure you get put on our special list of folks that know what we talk about, when we talk about it, the minute it comes out, so that way you can make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just could have heard it, it would have changed everything. Don't forget to become a P-Tacker. That's right. If you guys have been listening to the show for a long time, you're like, you know, we really feel like we're getting a lot out of this. Trey, you're committed. You keep knocking out shows. You're not giving up on it. You've been pumping these out for the last several years. We really want to be a part of helping see this show go further, and we want to help pay you for the time that you do. Here's one of the things we want to do that you can do for me. Go to thehumanpodcast.com. Click on the Become a Member or the P-Tacker spots on the page. Whenever you do that, it'll take you to a little page that'll give you the opportunity to say to sign up for $5 or sign up for $50 for a year. You can click on either one of those. $5 a month, if you can commit to doing that, it will automatically do the deductions for you. You don't have to keep going back in. You can cancel that membership at any time. It's no problem, and it doesn't take but a few clicks to sign in and then to cancel the membership. So simple, easy to do. Great way that you can say, here you go, Trey. Just take this money, and here's our appreciation for you for this month. Also, guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, something that you want us to cover, or a topic that you wish we could hit, we love to talk about what you like to talk about. Shoot it on over to us whenever you get a chance. TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. Click on the Contact Us page. You can always email us at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com, or you can call us 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT and the number zero. All right, with all of the housekeeping out of the way today, guys, let's get into our topic for today, which again is, are you raising a spoiled American? I think we have a tendency to do a lot of different things with this. Number one, we think, oh, there's no way, I'm not raising a spoiled child. But then when we really stop and we think about it, you know, sometimes we are. The bottom line is, guys, I mean, raising the anti-spoiled child is a major thing for us, for my wife and I here at the Homestead to Gibson. We really believe in teaching our kids to understand the values of the things that they buy. And you know what? Guess what? We still screw that up. We still walk in. We still do stuff we shouldn't do. We still do stuff that we still see these little behaviors pop up in our kids. We see these, we used to call it SOE as a kid, but sense of entitlements that our kids will get. And we, of all people, are nuts about that. And we try very hard not to see, you know, see our kids grow into that. And sometimes it still happens. So all of us at some point have to deal with the fact that this becomes a reality for us in some small or sometimes some huge way, whether we like it to or not. So we're going to cover this concept of what is spoiling. I mean, we hear a lot about this idea of, well, my kids are just spoiled. And I think sometimes we throw that around a little too flippantly, and then sometimes I don't think we throw it around seriously enough, and sometimes I think we go too serious with it, and we call our kids spoiled when that's not really necessarily what they are. So, you know, there's no doubt that we often misuse this in both directions. And so, you know, I think when we do this, well, Trey, what's wrong with that? My kid does this and that and that and this, and what's wrong with calling them spoiled? Well, sometimes we forget about the concept called just being blessed. Now, I'm approaching this as the term blessing. You guys know I've never hidden it here. The endorsement that my wife and I have is we support the God of the Christian Bible and the God Yahweh, etc. And so, you know, that, you know, we have some spiritual influence in that. But I know we have a demographic of folks that listen to this show that aren't necessarily Christian-based. Some of you guys are agnostic. I know we have several atheists. I know we have several deists. You guys are welcome here, by the way. Just for the record, we don't have to agree on those particular things to agree on our parenting. And so with all of that said, when I say blessed, what we're talking about is, I'm going to call it just unmerited favor that we can, that we get. When things just happen to us that really we didn't deserve, we didn't earn. Maybe it's something that happened to us that we really didn't necessarily earn that thing, but it just came to us anyway. I'll give you a good example. One of our dressers in our house broke apart, and we've got six kids, and so we need a lot of dressers. And we live in a house that was built in the very late 1800s, and it was just built back whenever you didn't have 100 different outfits that you could wear. So closet spaces are tiny, tiny, tiny small in this house. And a neat story behind it was a doctor. This used to be the old hospital out here in the city that I live in. And anyway, there's just not a lot of space. So the dressers are important. And one of our dressers just absolutely collapsed in on itself. I mean, it was something out of a movie that you would see. And this thing just completely destroyed itself. And so we had to throw it out, but we needed a new dresser. So we threw out an ISO in search of, for those of you guys that don't know, on Facebook and some of the garage sales on Facebook sites. And, you know, we got some hit backs, and we got this one back from this one lady, beautiful dresser, just absolutely could tell it was quality, handcrafted, dovetailing inserts and fitting, and I mean, it was just beautiful. And we snagged that sucker, we bought it in a heartbeat, we had the cash saved up, and we installed it. It turned out to be a dresser that was originally probably built in the 1960s, 1950s or 1960s, by a manufacturer that has been in production since the 1930s. Very neat piece. And so we got that set up. It was neat. Well, the next thing we know, we were out of a dresser in one of our other kids' rooms. We were starting to think about what we were going to do. Well, we had a lady call us and say, hey, I've got a dresser here. Do y'all still need one? And we actually said, no, we're really doing okay. And I think she offered us like $100 for it, you know, and we were like, you know, to offer to sell it to us for $100. And, you know, really, we've kind of got one. I think we're okay. We're not nearly as motivated as we were. And she goes, oh, okay. So she called back probably an hour later. She goes, you know, what do you think about $50? We're like, yeah, we really appreciate you being so, you know, being so generous and so courteous about that. The reality being is that we kind of want it at this point. We don't necessarily have to have it. And we told our story about adopting and how we were fostered to adopt. And this lady was very moved. And she said she was adopted by a family, and she has a real heart for fostering adoption and families that do that and whatnot. She goes, I tell you what, I really feel like God is calling me to give this to you guys. And so that's a blessing. Now, whether or not you believe that God called her to do it or not, some of you guys out there will align with me in the way we see that, and that's what we interpret it, and God loves it. But some of you guys will also look at this and say, yeah, I mean, how do we know, Trey, that it wasn't just, you know, that she just felt like being, you know, courteous or generous for what she was doing. And that's fine as well. One way or the other, she extended to us favor that wasn't earned. We didn't have to do anything to earn that necessarily. She just gave us the dresser, a dresser that she was trying to make money off of. She just gave it to us. And so what about those kinds of things? What about those gifts that we receive, even though we don't necessarily deserve those blessings? Does that mean that it's a problem if you live in America? Does that mean that you're spoiled because you have nice things, because you've maybe been given nice things? See, that's some of the questions that we want to answer today. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Africa, particularly in Tanzania in a small village called Changarawe. And I did a little bit of work there several years ago for some mission work. And, you know, it was interesting to go there because we could live off less than 1% of a penny a day and eat like kings. And most of the people there didn't make a fraction of that. And so I came, you know, I showed up with like maybe $10, and then I had a whole bunch of quarters with me and stuff like that. By all extents and definitions, when I set foot in that place, I was considered a millionaire. And I didn't feel like it because at the time I was a college student going on a trip to, you know, to Africa. So I felt like I was the poorest person ever. And I walked around and I saw so many sights and so many sounds that I felt ashamed to call myself poor ever again. I walked around and I saw people that lived, I'm in an office that is very small. I saw people that had families of five that lived in rooms made out of cinder blocks half this size. And all they had was a dirt floor and cinder block walls. It was just enough to keep the outside air off of them. And they lived in that. And I saw little kids that played and they would take a rhizoid, just a runner type grass, and they would ball it up and they taped it together. And they used it to play soccer with. And you can tell that wasn't regulation soccer size. But they were happy and they were enjoying themselves. And I'm not saying that you should sell your houses and go move into your cinder block house in the middle of nowhere and raise your kids to play on grass balls, you know, or anything like that. I'm not saying that. My point is that when I went and saw these things, I began to understand that the things that we think in America as poor and poverty and having a hard time, you know, they make that joke about first world problems. But the reality is, it's very true. It's very true. And if you spend any amount of time outside of the Americas, and if you haven't, I highly recommend that you do, spend some time outside of America and see what other places, particularly maybe, you know, some third world countries, not necessarily first world countries like you know, Britain and Australia and those places. Try to find a place that isn't like that, like Africa. Don't go get hurt. But it really can redefine some of what you see. It was very interesting. Like, for instance, we followed a couple of young kids, 5 all the way up to 8 years old, and they would get up every morning and they would walk several miles, up to 7 miles, to go to the school there. There was a Muslim school there that they would attend, and they would learn and they would get fed for lunch. And first off, they did it willfully. They did it happily. They had no complaints or quarrels about going to school because they acknowledged that going to school could keep them from having to do what their second half of their day was. At lunchtime, they would get done, they would walk another couple of miles to a rock quarry, and they would spend from about 1 o'clock until about 5 or 6 in the evening just chipping rocks into small pebbles. And that's what they did. 5, 7, and 8-year-old kid would do this every single day. And so they love school because they wanted to get out of that. And so, you know, I think that our concepts of what spoiling really is and what we deserve in life and what we should have in life is very skewed from what some people experience. But does that mean that it is wrong? The definition to spoil out of Webster's is to harm the character by being too lenient or too indulgent. Okay? So our question for today in the show is going to be, can humans have things without becoming harmed? Is it possible for our kids to have iPads and Xboxes? Is it possible for our kids to have new cars and all these other things and not be harmed? The answer most emphatically is yes. And we're going to talk about how we produce that today. The secondary piece to that answer is that it's not necessarily easy. Here's what I will say. Kids, and we're going to discuss this more as we get closer to the end of the show today, kids cannot have everything without being harmed. And I think that's the boundary that we have to ask ourselves for. So you say, well, then Trey, the answer sounds like it lies in, how do we let our kids have things but not give them too much? We're going to talk a little bit about that today. So the question then again is, can human beings have things without being harmed? We say yes. Then where does that boundary lie? Where does that boundary lie? Where is that line between kids having things and it being okay for them to be in a place where we have time and money and resources to buy things for kids and them not get to that point where it harms their character? Let me tell you what Trey's definition. Now, mind you, this is not dictionary definition. This is just Trey's personal definition as to what spoiling is. So Trey's definition is when a child has things and thinks that they deserve them because of who they are. See, this is what I think most parents wind up doing with their kids. They give them things. They give them stuff. They give them Netflix accounts and Hulu accounts and iPads and Xboxes and all this other stuff. And they think that they get these things solely because you are my kid. That is where the problem, I think, comes from. Because that is a disconnect. Because the reality is if you were to die, if your parents and if you were to die as parents, and all of a sudden you disappeared, and let's say you had no money and you didn't leave him any trust or anything like that, and all of a sudden they were out on their own, will they be given anything solely because they were your kid? The answer to that is emphatically, hell no. They won't do it. So you see, we're setting our kids up for a false reality if we do this. So where did this story come from today? Like, what was the motivation for today? It all started when a buddy of mine, Jim, actually posted an article on one of the sites that he and I were a part of, and it was called The 10 Daily Habits of Frugal People. And that really caught my attention. Corey and I are recovering anti-frugalists. Now, we used to not be frugal. We used to spend money, even though we didn't have much, and we lived off of my tiny little salary with single income and a lot more kids than most people. We were consumerists, and we bought, and we consumed, and we racked up debt so that we could consume more, and we are still paying on that mistake and that problem that we had. We are still trying to eat that back from whenever we were dumb and young. And so we are now recovering, and we are beginning to learn the benefits of frugality. I used to see it as miserly, as penny pinching, but I've begun to realize that until you start exercising frugality, you cannot truly be giving. Yeah, stick that in your pipe and smoke it today. To be able to be truly giving, anti-miserly, you have to be frugal first. You have to trim back on the things that I want and I demand and I need to be able to look out and say, okay, what are the needs around me and how can I help people meet that financially? You have to do that. So you see, I've not always been a frugally minded person, but that's all changed, you see, because now I'm starting to move to this. So when my buddy posted this article about the 10 daily habits of frugal people, it really caught my attention. And there was one in particular that really had me, and it was out of this list of 10, and I'm going to put a link to this, and I'm really going to recommend that you go read it, but number 3 caught my attention, and it's what sparked this entire episode for today. Number 3, frugal people don't spoil their children. Ding, caught my attention. This may not make you popular now, but later your kids just might appreciate it. When my kids were in public school, I was astonished at the cost of various activities and events. There were $40 field trips and $5 quote-unquote pizza days and special $50 hoodies with the school emblem. As a single mom with 2 kids in school, there was no way I was just going to fork out the money for this stuff. So when the girls came home with forms and asked for money, I made a list of extra chores they could do around the house to earn the money for the activity. If they didn't feel it was worth a little extra work for them, I certainly wasn't going to hand them hard-earned cash for it. They learned the value of work, the relationships between work and getting stuff, and that sometimes what they paid for just wasn't worth the effort and earning the money for it. As well, they came to appreciate special meals and activities more. I recently took them on a vacation for Christmas and splurged a little. I was touched by how appreciative they were and how delighted as I saw them take steps to keep expenses down, like packing a picnic in our little hotel kitchenette instead of planning to eat out all day. When a child, listen to this, guys, this is so important. When a child has constantly given everything, they grow up to be less satisfied and a lot harder to make happy. Those are the kids who grow up to be the adults who trade their cars in every 2 years and keep remortgaging their homes for things like pools and pricey vacations. It's far more loving to raise your child in an atmosphere that encourages thrift, productivity, and personal accomplishment instead of the silver platter environment. Oh, man. Boom, baby. Tell me that ain't it right there. You see, she just summarized this entire show that we're going to cover today in this one little number 3 on her 10 Daily Habits of Frugal People. You see, when we spoil our kids, right, whenever we overindulge them, when we indulge them to the point that we harm their character, kids don't grow up understanding the idea and the value of money. I mean, listen to that. I'm going to say it again. When we spoil our kids, they don't have a clue the idea of the value of money. What are you talking about, Trey, when you say the value of money? You see, every dollar that is spent equals a certain amount of hours. Now, see, this is not a very popular thought process. It's not very commonly or popularly taught. So you got to think about it this way. When you go out, and maybe you go to, you know, to Whataburger or something like that, or Burger King or one of those places, and you buy maybe their value menu, you know, stuff that's $6 to $8 a pop, and you value size it, and maybe add a pie in there or something like that, and you spend $8 to $9, $10, right, for this value meal, right? If you make $8 to $10 an hour, right? What you just basically essentially did is spent three quarters to an hour's worth of your time on a hamburger, French fries, a soda, and maybe a fruit pie or something like that. Was that meal worth an entire hour of your work? Did you go to work at 8 o'clock and work from 8 to 9, get done with that hour of work and think, thank God, now I've done what I needed to do to go and buy myself a hamburger? Was it really that worth it? And I don't think that we think like that. And kids nowadays surely aren't thinking that way. Why is that? Because for these kids that we're being raised, and guys, it was our generation that got started being raised this way, and we're starting to pass that on. Most of us are getting pissed, and we're trying to work on it. But what's the fundamental issue? The fundamental issue is that our kids nowadays stay completely and fully saturated. They're saturated. And I know a lot of you guys out there, there's so many folks out there just need a reason to be pissed off at kids. You're just like, oh, yeah, look at that. I told you. Look at their kids nowadays are just spoiled little jerks. Listen, who the crap is raising them? It's us. So first off, we have to acknowledge that. A lot of these behaviors that are coming out of our kids, we are the ones that taught them to be this way. I'm not saying that to be a jerk, to be a turd, to make you mad. I'm saying that because we can't help our kids start to grow in these areas and change that unless we're willing to admit our side of it. If we don't change, more than likely the kids won't either. Our kids are fully saturated. They've got everything. You're like sponges. That's the way saturation works. Whenever a sponge reaches full saturation, there is no possible way for there to be any more absorption in that sponge. It won't absorb any more water. It's completely, completely full. If you want it to accept more, you have to wring it out so that way it can absorb more. Our kids are fully saturated. They have everything that they want, everything that they desire, everything that they could ever wish for. Maybe that doesn't mean they get it right then, but they know if they just wait the next few months, they're going to get it for their birthday or they're going to get it for Christmas, right? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with buying your kids stuff for Christmas or their birthdays. Yes, we buy our things for our kids during both of those seasons. There's nothing wrong with that inherently. But our kids are so saturated with stuff. Guys, they never live in a state of deficit because everything that they ever want is always purchased for them. We buy it for them. You know, I love the suggestion that she makes in here because she talks about the $50 hoodies. Because I started thinking if it was my kid and they brought that home and I couldn't buy that for them, I'd feel bad. And then I started thinking about it. Why? Why would I feel bad if I can't buy them a $50 hoodie with the school name on it? If they want it, they should be saving their monies for it. You see, there's so many things that I think in life we feel we must provide our kids. Right? That's how we produce that spoiledness we're talking about. We feel like there's so many things we must provide our kids, we don't ever stop to think, is this really necessary? Should I be providing them with this? So our kids have never lived in this deficit. You see, here's the way it works. When any human operates in a deficit, it creates a desire, right? A desire for something, a new thing. If we live in a deficit, we acknowledge we don't have the latest fill in the blank and we want it, right? Well, when we have a desire, that creates motivation. I really want this new X thing that came out there. So now I want to have one, but it's not going to be given to me. So now I'm motivated to do something about it. When we receive motivation, that's whenever we become in a state of action. We do something about it. I want the new iPhone 6 that's coming out. I have a desire for that, so you know what? Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to figure out a way that I can make that money, and I'm going to take action and make that money so that way I can buy my iPhone 6. So here's the thing. There's so many people out there that say, well, this generation of kiddos, they're just lazy. All they do is sit around and play video games, blah, 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 blah. Again, we're the ones who raised them, right? Of course. Of course this generation of kids is lazy. They aren't pissed off enough. There's actually this one scene that really does a good job of kind of describing this, but it comes out of a show called Generation Kill. It was an HBO special about some Marines that were deployed across seas during, I think, the Iraqi Freedom. I can't remember. But one of the campaigns that we did in Iraq, and one of the things they were talking about was that the Marines could never get anything. And what they do is they have a journalist that gets attached to their unit, and they have this journalist buy everything that they could. And the journalist is bringing back all of this stuff. And here's how the quote's going. He's coming back with all these things. He goes, AAA batteries, dip, skull, Copenhagen, baby wipes, flavored Pringles in a can, and adult diapers as requested. Why do you need me to get all this stuff? And one of the sergeants named Iceman said, in the infinite wisdom of whoever runs the military post-exchange store, they won't sell this stuff in quantity to military personnel. But for civilians like yourself, the sky is the limit. And the journalist replies, and why is that? And another one of the corporals named Person says, to keep us angry. If Marines could get what they needed when they needed it, we would be happy. And we wouldn't be ready to kill people all the time. The Marine Corps is like America's pit bull. They beat us, mistreat us, and every once in a while they let us come out to attack someone. But you see what's happening here. What they said is they don't let Marines satiate themselves. They don't let them get full. They don't let them get completely soaked through because they recognize in the human spirit, right? Whenever there's a deficit, there's a desire. When there's a desire, there's motivation. When there's motivation, there's action. It's as simple as that. And our kids aren't pissed off enough. They don't have the need or the want or the desire for anything. Even if they don't have that thing or want or desire, they know just give it enough time and enough begging or enough whatever, I'm going to get it. Now, once again, I'm not dogging on this generation of kids. If one of you guys in this generation is listening to this, I'm not dogging on you. Right now, I'm gritching at all the parents that are raising you guys. So here's the question. How do we avoid raising spoiled children? How do we raise kids that aren't harmed through the indulgence or the overindulgence that we can provide in a country that really we make enough money and there's enough crap in it that it's easy, 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 easy to do? How do we do that? How do we keep from raising spoiled children? Here's what I think the answer is. Kids must, not should, not kind of, not maybe, not if we get time. It should be imperative, tantamount, the foundation of it all. Kids must learn to associate things that they want with work hours. They must understand, if you want fill in the blank, it is associated and attached to this many work hours. If you want a $300 cell phone, then that means at minimum wage, here's how many hours you're going to have to work. Do you want to work? Let's do the math on that. So factor it in that you got a $300 cell phone. Guys, I don't know what minimum wage is. I don't care enough. I just remember kind of what it was back when I used to work around that age. It was about $850. It was like $725 to $850. So we're just going to say I did it at $850. If you have a $300 phone at $8.50 an hour, that means you've got to work 35 hours to pay that off. That's almost an entire work week. Is it worth it to spend one whole week, 7 days, 8 hours a day working to produce one of these phones? See, I don't think we think like that anymore. We don't comprehend this idea, and our kiddos sure as heck nowadays, they're not thinking about that. They're not understanding that everything that you do is associated to work hours. Well, how do we do that? I'll explain real quick how the Homestead to Gibson does it. You know, we have chores and we have work projects. Chores are even we believe, and we are huge. I mean, we are just strict about paying our kids for work. However, even we believe there are certain things that are just part of the responsibilities of living in the house, right? You want to live in the house, we have to take care of it. We have to keep it clean. We have to keep it picked up. We have to keep it vacuumed. We have to keep it disinfected so we don't get sick. We have to pick the food up. We have to take the trash out. All those kinds of things that are just basic. You know, you live here, you're a part of this. We connect those with things like iPads. See, the iPads belong to us. I buy up broken iPads and I fixed them up and put them into service and let my kids use them, right? And so internet, we purchase internet. We have high-speed internet, and that's mostly for my business as well as the fact that we love to stream videos and stuff like that. That's important to us. So we have these things. And so for us, for our kids, we never require them to do the chores, right? Remember, we can't force our kids to do something. We can make things uncomfortable so that they want to. But the bottom line is this, we can't make our kids do chores, but we tie it to, listen, we also provide all the internet and all the iPads, and if you want these things, this is what you have to do. You have to be a part of just helping the house be taken care of, and when you do that, then you get access to these things. We separate that out from work. A work can be anything that isn't basic house related that's extra jobs, and our kids fight over these jobs because they understand this is where they get paid for things. Sometimes they get paid in a stick of gum because from some of my kids, a stick of gum is way more important and the jobs aren't big enough to warrant huge amounts. Sometimes they get paid in a stick of gum, maybe a pick from the candy basket, various other things that we do. And sometimes we pay them direct money. Often my kids now are getting to that age where money's more important to them. They'd rather stack those dollars up and be able to buy something on Amazon or pick something up at Walmart the next time they go. So that's the way we do it. So we give them the opportunity to have work jobs that they can do, little things that they can contribute to. That can be as simple as they go outside and pick up all the shoes. Because we have a thousand, quadrillion, bajillion shoes. When you have kids, this many kids, and you're a stay-at-home family, you have, you know, like five sets of outdoor shoes that they have to wear, and they have their nice Sunday shoes, and they have their, you know, wear around town shoes and all that other stuff. And so we just have shoes out the butt, man. We just have tons of shoes. And so, like, what's one of the jobs we send them outside is to go pick up all the shoes. And my wife repurposed an old pallet where she set it up on its side, and you slide the shoes in there side by side, you know, in the slats, and it holds them for them. It keeps them organized. And so we have that, you know, so maybe it's that. Today, the kids were really jonesing for some jobs. I mean, they really wanted some jobs big time today because they're all trying to save up for these plush toys that we just bought. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But they're all saving up for these little plush toys, and so everybody's trying to get money. And so today we had them scrubbing baseboards. You know, they really wanted the money, so they scrubbed the dirt and the crud off the baseboards today. And so we come up with, you know, random jobs. Sometimes that job is to help take Charlotte to go potty. We always pay our kids when they help with anything that's like raising and stuff like that. My daughter has been teaching my son how to read. Now, we do pay her in various ways for that because those are things that we don't consider to be their jobs. Those are us as parents' jobs that they're willing and wanting to take part in. And so we pay them for those types of things. So we do that because if our kid wants something, they must work for it. When we go to the store and my dad's like, "Oh, Dad, can I get one of these?" They know now. The very first question they're going to hear come out of daddy's mouth is, "Do you have money?" Yes. Then do you have enough money? Well, I don't know. Let's do the math on that. This would practice a little math right there. I say, "Yes, I have the money." Cool. You can buy it. See, that's the mentality we go through. So, "Ooh, Dad, I want this." "Oh, cool. Okay, you want that, huh? Well, do you have the money?" "No." "Okay. Then I tell you what, when you go home today, if you want to, we will find you some jobs where you can start earning the money for that." We do not buy toys for our kids on the spot. Now, sometimes we'll do loans. We'll say, "Dad, can I buy this?" "Well, do you have the money?" "Yes." "Did you bring your money with you?" "No." "I tell you what, if you want to, you can go ahead and buy this. When we get to the house, you can pay me, and it'll be considered reimbursement." "Okay, Dad." And then we do that, right? But the fundamental answer is we never buy things. I'm telling you, unless it's their birthday or Christmas, we never buy things for our kids just because, unless one of the kids, and we're going to talk more about this here in just a little bit, has been exceptionally giving or kind or helpful or thoughtful. I'll tell you a good example of what we did the other day. We made hot chocolate. And it was cold, you know, cold here in Texas and icy, and so we made hot chocolate. That's just kind of the iconic, axiomatic, you know, drink you have to make when it's cold outside, right? And we made it, and we sat down, and Cora got up and was moving around to get a spoon, I think, to stir up some of the chocolate, and she knocked her hot chocolate over. Well, this is after we had talked about not spilling it. If you did, you're not getting more. And my son saw that she did that, and he saw her starting to tear up and start to cry, and he stopped, and he looked down inside his, and you could just see that battle. He looked back up, and he just had this determined look in his face, and he walked over, and he handed Cora his chocolate milk and said, "Cora, I want you to have the rest of mine." And he walked off, went right into his room, and I could tell he wasn't real happy about not having his hot chocolate, but later I asked him about it. He said, "I just couldn't see her sit there and be sad about that." So, of course, I called him back in there, and I'd already made him a fresh cup with some fresh, you know, marshmallows in there. So he got paid for that, right? Because he did something that was especially kind for his sister that I know is important to him. So in cases like that, you know, we'll do it, and we'll do that kind of thing. But outside of that, if a kid wants something, they got to buy it. I mean, they got to buy it. We don't just go and buy things for them. So one thing I want to kind of clarify on what we just talked about there, does that mean that all things in the homestead to Gibson must be earned and bought with money? The answer is no. Just like in the case with Grant there with the hot chocolate, sometimes we look for those extra special stuff. We also don't necessarily use cash to do that. Like I mentioned earlier, sometimes we let them do a pick from, you know, they pick a stick of gum or they can pick from the candy bowl. I told you about the plush toy. What that is my wife found this stash of Minecraft plush toys. And they're not just Minecraft people. They're Minecraft people that they love. So, like, they watch these certain people's, like, Stampy Longcat and Ibalistic Squid. They're their favorite. They love watching these guys play Minecraft, and they just think they're wonderful. Well, these are plush toys that are actually these characters, you know, these characters and what they look like on Minecraft. And so we bought a whole bunch of that. And, I mean, our kids are foaming at the flipping mouth to get these suckers. And they are ready to do that. And so we use those, and we often will pay the kids for those. And more often than not, we do it equivalent. We price those toys out a little low than what they really cost, but we did that because we want to set them up so that way our kids have something they can work towards and they don't have to work too long, especially with kids' diminished ability to stay focused. We want them to quickly understand, I work hard, I get blank, fill in blank, whatever it is, in this case, a Minecraft plush toy. We don't want to go too long before they do that. But there's other things, too, that we often leverage that's not money. Sometimes it's who gets to go on the trip with Daddy. Like, if Daddy's got to go into town just a while back, or just earlier tonight, as a matter of fact, we needed some, because we ran ourselves through quite a bit of wood. My mother-in-law basically called us and said, if you'll go and pick up the wood, I'll pay for it and I'll split it with you if you'll be the one to pick it up and bring it to me. So we did that. So I had to go on this little trip, so I had to bring a kid with me. And it just so happened that Tia has been especially kind today, especially helpful on getting the house clean. So she got to come with Daddy because of that, right? That was something that she worked. We have a phrase in this house that you will hear, and you can ask any one of my kids, oh, what do we say, kids? If we work hard, they know to finish. We play hard. Because anytime we get to work hard, then we get to play hard as well. And we get to play every bit as hard as it is that we work, right? And so if we work hard around the house, sometimes we get to go on extra trips with daddies, right? Like I said, that's for like extra special attitude or actions or motivations and those kinds of things typically when we do that. So it's not necessarily just the work that we're trying to reinforce. It's the motivation behind the work that we love. Like with Grant, he wasn't looking for anything. He wasn't giving that because he was hoping he was going to get more hot chocolate. He was giving because he was especially trying to be sweet and kind to his sister. Well, that's crap we want to see more of. So, right, he's the one who gets, you know, reinforced for that. I'll tell you, Anna, my oldest daughter Anna, is starting to figure this stuff out. And just the other day, we came in and she was in the washroom, and she was sitting there switching clothes out from the washer to the dryer. And my wife poked her head and said, Anna, what are you doing? She goes, well, I'm changing the clothes to the dryer. And she goes, why? And she goes, just because it needed to be done. See, Anna's figured out that she gets reinforced more when she just does stuff than because it needs to be done. Well, the other day, we caught her doing that. And we said, I'll tell you what, we're gonna pay you for that. And Anna came out. This is my 8-year-old freaking daughter, better at it than her 32-year-old father, poked her head out and said, we're going to get you something really nice for that, Anna. Thank you for doing that. And she goes, no. And she just held her hands up and just the polite declining, no, I'm doing this because I want to. Please don't give me anything. And she really actually refused a nice pick of a gift, and she didn't want it. And what's happened is now that we're doing that, and she's getting more and more reinforced, guess who else is starting to want to do these things too? It starts now with Grant. Grant's getting more and more interested in helping around the house and doing things and taking Tia to go, I mean, Charlotte to go potty. And Charlotte's our 2-year-old, by the way, and he wants to take Charlotte to go potty, and he's getting interested because there's a trickle-down effect. And then everybody sees him doing it, and everybody else wants to do it. Next thing you know, everybody's being kind and being helpful and being productive and helping the house get clean. It's interesting how it works. And I want to be real straight with you guys. It's real easy to get into this and to forget a few things. I want you guys to remember, before we wrap this up today, that kids, even under this system that I just described, in other words, what I'm saying is even my kids that are raised under the system that I just explained to you, sometimes forget that they don't deserve certain things like iPads, Xbox, etc., right? Kids will get to that point to where it becomes such a habit to them, they see it as being kind of theirs. They begin to feel like they're entitled to it, right? Here's the issue. Sometimes kids need to be reminded that they do not deserve these things. Now, I want to be super clear. Listen to me so very carefully right now. This is not a freaking power struggle. Do you hear me? When I say that sometimes kids need to be reminded of the fact that they do not deserve these things, this is not about a power struggle. This is not about trying to make them realize that you've got the power over all these things and you can take it away in the flip of a switch. This is just a firm reminder, gentle reminder. You do not deserve. Guys, listen, I know y'all love playing iPad and Xbox, but the fact of the matter is we do not have to provide you guys with internet access or these consoles. We don't have to. We do that because we love you guys and we see where y'all are working hard, and we want to thank y'all for that with these things. However, if y'all want to stop being helpful with chores, then we're going to stop offering these things to you because that's not the way the world works. You don't get to have everything you want and not work. Don't get me wrong. If we keep allowing socialism to take over in America, yes, we will get to that point. Until finally all the rich people and the people that are working hard make their decision not to do that anymore. But before I get into a political stuff that's going to honk everybody off, let's move on. See, here's the issue. We have to teach that there is value and everything that they have. Kids must know that for every single thing that is in their possession, every single thing that's in their house, every single service like the internet or the data streaming that's on their phones, everything has a value behind it. And we have to teach our kids what that value is. And we have to do that by allowing a deficit and allowing them to decide what's important enough to spend their man hours on. So we have to answer this question that we talked about at the very start. Is there something wrong with kids having stuff? No. There is nothing wrong with kids having stuff. There's nothing wrong with blessings. But the reality comes down to one simple thing. If our kids are going to have stuff, they've got to make sure that they earn it. If they want their stuff, they have to earn it, whether it's through good behavior, good grades, or hard labor. The things that our kids have must be earned, or they do not come to an appreciation of the thing that they have. They don't operate out of deficit and then hard work to fill the deficit. Kids need to make sure that they earn the things that they have in their life and that they know it. That they have that thing because they worked hard for it. Because they now contain something within their possession that is their private property, and it is theirs, and it is only theirs. That is beautiful. Well, all right, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Even Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. If you come join us this Wednesday, we'll have another show of the Family Podcast Network, as well as this Friday with Jeff and I. Hopefully we'll be back on the mic. Jeff was out of town, and we had a lot of sick kids that day, so we called it last Friday. But we should be back in the saddle this Friday for our next episode of the Real Family Guys Podcast. Be sure to come join us. If nothing else, we'll see you all on Wednesday. We'll be right back.